Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch in a few moments. Our thanks to Donnie Collins, who joined us in the previous half hour. Final half hour today, Neil Coulong on the Steelers of USA Today. First of all, our play-by-play call today. Eagles last night beat the Redskins 28-13.
Sproles on the game to the left of Wentz. Slot to the far side. Jeffrey to the near side. This time, it goes to Sproles at the 15. Cuts back at the 10. At the 5. He's in the end zone. Mighty Mouse goes!
Yes, indeed. Merrill Reese with another brilliant call on the Eagles radio network, also heard on Eagle 107. It was a win that the Eagles needed last night to get to 6-6 on the year. Game back of the Cowboys in the NFC East. The Cowboys are 7-5. Coming up on the horizon, Eagles and Cowboys. It was also a night where Colt McCoy broke his leg. That's the second quarterback for the Redskins to break their leg in the past 2-3 weeks. And Mark Sanchez had to finish up last night. And the Redskins are now trying to go at it with a third-string quarterback, and no word on what they're going to do with a backup for Sanchez. But that was a big win last night for Philadelphia. They needed that. They won 28-13. Golden Tate had his first Eagles touchdown last night. All right, so the big news of the day, obviously, not unexpected that Urban Meyer would retire. I expected it personally that it would be January 2nd that he would make the announcement, that they'd go through the Rose Bowl, enjoy the whole deal. Then the next day at the year-end press conference, he had announced that he was going to retire. That's what I thought he was going to do. Instead, he made the decision now, and Ryan Day will take over on January 2nd as the head coach. And with that, we bring in Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch. Tim, it's always great to hear you on the other end.
Yeah, man, glad to be here, I think.
Any surprise about this at all? Was there any point where you thought, okay, it's possible, but then was there a point where you thought, nah, I think he's okay now?
Oh, no, I thought it was coming down. I just didn't know when it was coming down. That was the only, quote-unquote, surprise. But, I think that's the way anybody wants to start their morning, right, with a 6 o'clock call from somebody telling you it's happening, and then you go from there. But no, it's, Urban Meyer's been dealing with an arachnoidal cyst between his skull and his brain for a long time, and this year, of course, it flared up big time again on him, and then, of course, it's been sort of the season from hell for him to a certain extent, the year from hell, and now he's just decided, it's time to step away and enjoy life a little bit. So we'll see what he actually says here in about 15 minutes at the press conference.
He's earned it, though. He's earned the right to step away, and it's one thing to look at the total body between Bowling Green, Utah, and Florida. Put into perspective what he has meant at Ohio State, he and Shelley on and off the field.
Well, on the field, he's 82-9 as a head coach. He didn't get credit for the 3 wins at the start of the year because he was suspended. That Ryan Day, the new head coach, got those credits, but he's been about winning, period. He won the first college football playoff championship in 2014. His team did, as he will tell you, not him. And since then, he's had, since he's been at Ohio State, I don't think he's had a season under 12 wins. Maybe there was one there with 11, but that's remarkably phenomenal. And so on the field, that's what he's been all about. The third greatest winning percentage in history,
yes,
behind Newt Rockne, I think, and Frank Leahy, if I'm not mistaken, two Notre Dame legends.
Yes,
but then past that, off the field, I mean, he's their APR has gone up since he's been here. Their graduation rate has gone up since he's been around. He started these real life Wednesdays programs, for example. They bring in big time people from the world of all, you know, all kinds of lawyers, businessmen like Jamie Dimon from banking fame, and all these guys to come in and talk to the team about life other than football and to open their eyes about things. A job fair he started a long time ago is a big hit now. It includes the entire athletic program, other things like making sure players had iPads to study, like to begin with study for football thing, but then it turned into study for academics. Right. On top of it, now I think they give all the freshman class in the school iPads to do that. Just little different things that he's done, and you know, visiting hospitals, all that kind of stuff. And it's ad nauseum. I mean, how much that goes on with him that's totally unreported. But you know, stuff that stick. You know, that everybody wants to lean on is what happened in July and August. You know, and that's just life anymore.
I'm not even going to go in that direction, only because of I think that's obvious. Everybody knows about it. But I want to talk about, you know, the other stuff that's happened, because look, the guy does have a legacy beyond just a moment. And I want to get to the part about with the media. You're a pro's pro with a great reputation. Okay, how well did you get along with him, or was it complicated?
I got along with him pretty well. I mean, you know, he was not. I mean, I used to just walk into the building, walk into John Cooper's office, sit down, and start shooting the bull. You know,
right?
That was never the case with Urban Meyer. It wasn't the case with Jim Tressel either. But you know, everybody's different. I never judge people necessarily by how I'm treated or the treatment I get. You know, one way or the other. But when I needed something, for example, I got it. You know. From Urban Meyer, and that's all you can count on. That's all you really care about. And so, you know, it wasn't warm and fuzzy. I mean, you know, we haven't gotten to watch a full practice, and I don't think seven. Yeah, we got to watch a couple of full practices way back when. I'm talking about maybe like 10 total. So yeah. You know, you don't get to go to practice anymore and watch practice or anything like that. But that's life in the Twitter age, man. When people decide tweeting a team's, you know, what they consider to be the team's game plan is news, you know. But but the bottom line is, I got along with him fine. So I'm probably the wrong guy to ask, because I knew him when he was a GA here back in '86 and '87, and so we already had a relationship, so to speak, when he showed up again.
Well, no, actually, you are the right guy to ask, because in other words, if I'm going to ask somebody who's one of the more respected people on the beat if they were treated with respect by him, then that tells me a lot.
That's
where I go with that's where I'm going with that question. If one of the more respected people's treated with respect, that tells.
But here's the thing about Urban though. Yeah. Urban didn't Nick Saban. Urban has rarely ever gotten to the podium and started lecturing the media.
Right.
I mean, the only time he's shown some displeasure a few times, and a couple of times probably we had it coming, but. He's never been one of those guys to get up and I'm smarter than you, and he's always answered questions directly. And my famous line about that is, don't ask him a question you don't want to hear his answer to, you know.
Right.
But he's never been. He's always been cordial in that respect. But he's also almost always seemed like he had somewhere else to be. You know what I mean? In a few minutes. So.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
You know, yeah.
This is a week where we're honoring former President Bush, and when Ronald Reagan was shot, different circumstance, he had to run the cabinet meetings for a month, and he never sat in the president's chair, not one time.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Ryan Day in this situation had to be the interim coach. A, how did he handle that, and what insight does it give you as to how he could be as the full-time coach?
I thought he handled it extremely well. Because one minute he's the offensive coordinator and gets a phone call, the next minute he's the acting head coach. And he leaned heavily on a couple of veterans on the staff, Greg Schiano, who Penn State fans remember was an assistant over there a long time ago, but
yes.
Was a former Rutgers coach, former mm-hmm. Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, leaned heavily on him for guidance, and on Kevin Wilson, the other offensive coordinator here, former head coach at Indiana, and he also leaned heavily on Mickey Marotti, the football performance coordinator, is among the elite in that profession, and maybe the best in college football, although Alabama would probably argue, you know, their guy is. But the bottom line is, but Urban Meyer leaned on those guys too, you know, and,
right.
And Ryan Day, you know, persevered, learned on the job. And like I said, you know, he went 3-0, you know, he's the only he's the only head coach in Major College Football right now who's undefeated.
That's true.
So they got that going for him. And like I've also, you know, when people, I've gotten this question today because I've done a bunch of these shows, and I go, well, you know, you look at programs around the country, Alabama, between Gene Stallings and Nick Saban, you know, ran the gamut on former head coaches, et cetera, who they thought could keep the program going, and they pretty much failed. And at least as far as getting it to the lofty heights they want. I mean, you can say an acting head coach somewhere is going to be better than this guy, but you don't know that at all.
No.
I mean, look at Michigan between Lloyd Carr and Jim Harbaugh, and I think Harbaugh's doing a good job.
Yes.
But just look what they went through.
Yeah.
Look at Penn State, you know. I mean, you know, what happened there after Joe Pye initially left. You know, there were a lot of guys were rowing the boat there, so to speak. Pardon the expression, PJ Fleck. But, James Franklin, I think, has gotten that thing definitely turned around. And, you know, it always comes back to recruiting and maybe making some good calls, you know, in crucial situations on the field. But Ryan Day is like, you know, he's in tight with like several of the big time recruits, and they haven't had a recruit defect yet from this class since this news popped. Because I think Urban Meyer let them all know on Monday night what his thoughts were, is what I was picking up on. That's why I was trying to nail that story down last night instead of at 6 a.m. this morning. But but the bottom line is, Ryan Day's 39 years old. He's been around the block, and like you said, he's had his feet in the pool there, a really hot pool there for a while until withdrawing him, and now he's the guy. So 10 years from now, you guys can call me from my vacation, my retirement home somewhere, and ask me. They'll wheel me to the phone, and I'll give you some answers.
That's exactly right. It's interesting because Oklahoma has only gone outside once in 60 years, and that was Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah.
Every time they actually promoted from everybody else been promoted within. He does have, obviously, the Chip Kelly influence in him from the time he spent with him. Do you see that in the offensive approach with Ohio State now, a little bit of Chip Kelly in there?
Well, that's because of Urban Meyer in his year sabbatical when he left Florida, you know, and he had to leave coaching the time before for his health and stuff, his well-being. It turned out coaching was part of his well-being as much as anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
But I digress.
That's exactly.
I mean, everybody thinks he's going to come back and coach somewhere else again. You know, who knows? Who knows if that's going to happen? He's definitely got to deal with this problem in his head.
Yeah.
But I digress. Bottom line is he was, you know, the first thing he did at Ohio State was he wanted to put in that up-tempo offense that Chip Kelly had made famous at Oregon, and they did. That's why he brought in Tom Herman to begin with, because Iowa State, he had done that.
That's right.
And he likes Ray, but he's like Ryan Day. Ryan Day was a GA or a graduate assistant at Florida back in 2005, 1 year before he got a full-time assistant job somewhere. So he's known about him for a long time, but there's no doubt that the pro influence that Ryan Day brought to the passing game, I mean, you know, just ask Penn State fans the last 2 years. I mean, what saved Ohio State's bacon was this passing game. And obviously, Ohio State's quarterback is a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, Dwayne Haskins Jr., after setting Big Ten records for passing yards and touchdown passes. So I think that approach is here to stay one way or the other.
I know you have to get to the press conference. I'm going to let you go and take care of that. We appreciate greatly that you gave us an opportunity to talk today.
Sure, man. Anytime. See you guys.
That's Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch. Neil Coulong in the final half hour. Thanks for joining us today. Santa tonight from 6 to 7 in the Magic Radio here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. Great to have you with us today. Urban Meyer announcing his retirement today. And did so at a press conference at 2 o'clock today. There's one area where I was saying earlier that I thought maybe January 2nd he would step down. And seriously, that's what I thought. But that was me not taking into account modern-day rules. With the new early signing period, which started last year, the early signing period this year is December 19th. So here it is. It's December 4th, and Urban Meyer steps down. Now, he'll coach the bowl game. But this now allows Ryan Day the opportunity to go out there, keep everybody on board, and Meyer's already talked to his prospective signees that he's going to do this. But it allows Ryan Day to then go out and sew up the recruiting class himself without having players signing and then saying, oh, well, I didn't sign on to have Urban have Ryan Day as my head coach. I signed up because Urban Meyer is going to be. Now at least everybody knows what the deal is. And they haven't lost anybody, which Tim May pointed out. But that's why you see, for example, why now and not a month from now. That is the reason why. It's the recruiting part of it. And no matter what, it's the part I don't talk a lot about. Number one, I don't want to slip and throw a name out there because I fall under NCAA rules, and it would be a violation if I did, if I talked about somebody before they signed. And I have so many games I have to do, baseball, then to football, to basketball, that I don't have the time of the Greg Pickles, the Ryan Snyders, Sean Fitzes, those who are really great at it, Mark Brennan. I mean, they're really great at it. Not good at it, they're great at it. The ability to follow everybody, what they're doing, how they're, what do they have it down to? What are the factors? Talking to the parents. I have zero time for that. They do, and they're great at it. So that's why we rely on them to come on the show and talk about it. But bringing this back full circle, recruiting is the lifeblood of any program. And you've got to keep recruiting at a top 10 level all the time in order to keep yourself potentially at a top 10 level. Anytime you have any kind of slip in recruiting, it does come back to get you. It may be in a season, it may be in an area of depth, something, but it comes back to get you. Meyer understands this. I mean, let me look at James Franklin. James Franklin is an absolutely tireless recruiter. You know, Bill O'Brien did great things here, but when it comes to the recruiting part, Bill O'Brien was a pro coach trying to recruit. It's not easy. All right. James Franklin throws his heart and soul into the recruiting part, and you see the results of it, what it's done here. You see what it's done here results-wise for Penn State. That's why Penn State's been in a position where they can win 31 games in 3 years. Because they have gone out, they've recruited, and to their credit, they've developed it. So James Franklin's been a tireless recruiter. He has a staff of tireless recruiters because all of them realize that the present and the future of Penn State football is wrapped up in these signing dates. Then, of course, they'll get him on campus, and once they do, they get to be with Dwight Galton, their staff, get to be with the training staff, speed staff. Then they get to be with the coaching staff. They're taught. They go through film, all that stuff that makes them better. But you have to have a base of talent to begin with. You can't teach speed. You can't teach length. You can't teach. You can teach some football instincts, but it's really great when it's innate. And Urban Meyer decided to step down now because of the recruiting component. If you still had the late signing period only, the first Wednesday of February, I think he might have waited until January 2nd to do it. But with the early signing period, December 19th, just 15 days away, he felt he had to do it now. That way Ryan Day was entrenched and the selection was already made that he is the head coach. That's just the way it is in the current cycle now. That's why you see coaches getting released sometimes in mid-season because they want to be able to get somebody out of the gate right away and get into the recruiting part. That's why Tennessee botching its coaching search last year. You sit there and say, guys, the early signing date's coming up. You don't have anybody yet? That's where Maryland. Maryland has done almost no recruiting in the last 3 months. Very little of it because of the uncertainty as to who's going to be the head coach.
I always kind of wondered about that with maybe they should bring Ralph Friedgen back, but he probably has a little beef still with the current president, Wallace Lowe, so I wouldn't think that would happen.
I think Mike Loxley and Matt Canada are the two primary candidates in Maryland. Mike Loxley is currently the Alabama offensive coordinator. He had been on the Maryland staff. In fact, he was the interim head coach at Maryland when Penn State played in Baltimore 2 years ago. I think he's a prime candidate, and I also think based on the job he did this year, Matt Canada has made himself a primary candidate. You've got to think before the week is out that Maryland names a head coach. I think they have to. The clock is ticking, and right now they're way behind in recruiting for this year because the clock's been ticking, and they've been just playing the waiting game. Final half hour, Neil Kulong, USA Today on the Steelers. Sorry, Sue.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Urban Meyer, officially retiring today from Ohio State. His last game, he will coach the Rose Bowl, the first one he's ever coached in. And then Ryan Day on January 2nd takes over. But he makes the move now, 15 days before the early signing period. That way recruiting stays intact. And they'll go from there. We know it's been a rough year because the Zach Smith situation was so poorly handled by Urban Meyer, and then how he's handled Zach Smith goes back to his days at Florida. It's the way it is. You have to mention that that's part of it. And he admits that he's probably emotionally too tied to the Earl Bruce family, of which Zach Smith is the grandson of Earl Bruce. Unfortunately, that can happen, but there's a victim in that, and it's Courtney Smith. As a coach, obviously, exemplary record. When they beat Michigan, for example, 62-39, Urban Meyer's now 7-0 against Michigan. Won their third Big Ten championship game in the last 5 years. Three national titles. Two at Florida, one at Ohio State. So he's announced today stepping down. And Ryan Day, who was 3-0 early in the season when Urban Meyer was watching at home because he wasn't allowed to coach, will be the new head coach at the age of 39, the youngest head coach hired at Ohio State since 1951 when a 38-year-old named Woody Hayes took over. All right, now let's get to the Steelers. Sean, I know you've been dreading this.
Last couple games have been tough.
Well, I mean, look, I don't understand why everybody in Pittsburgh, I mean, you have an opportunity to witness history and you thumb your nose at it. 220 wins, no losses, and two ties in games leading by 14 or better at home since the franchise started.
Streaks
then
up.
Then they make some history and you guys go, ugh. I mean, there's no historians in the group.
No.
I mean, to the suit, history's lunch. All right, so
4 hours ago, yeah.
Well, maybe we got to go back to snack. That was an hour ago. Okay, so with that, we bring in Neil Kulong, USA Today. Hello, Neil. Welcome. Great to have you back.
As usual, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's great to have you on board. Okay, you have to give the Steelers credit. They have the ability to make history. 220-0-2 in games leading by 14 or more at home. There's now one on there. See, a history-making moment. Neil, what went awry on Sunday night?
What didn't go awry? I mean, really, you know, it was funny. After the game, I saw an inordinate amount of comments suggesting, I don't want to hear about this facet of the game. This was the real problem. There were like five or six of them, and they were all right. It's like, you can't pin this all on the officials. You can't pin it all on Ben. You can't pin it all on the defense. Mm-hmm. But every one of those things had a significant impact against the Steelers in that game. In fact, if you look back on it, it's kind of amazing that it was a game that was decided on the final play of the game. I mean, really, nothing went the way that it probably should have in an even situation for the Steelers. And this is a team that dominates pretty much everybody they play, you know, a prime time situation, you know, at Heinz Field, particularly in December. They totally flipped the script on that. For a second week in a row, they found a very kind of unorthodox, kind of odd way to lose a game. And these were two games they absolutely had to win, considering what they have to go in their final four. So it's a loss they absolutely did not have time to sit and dwell on. And now this is a must-win game for them. At Oakland, a team that they don't particularly beat often in Oakland either, never when Ben starts. So it's they've dug their grave, and I honestly don't know how this is all going to shake out.
James Conner will not be a part of the mix, at least this weekend, after getting hurt. Exactly, do you know what he did, and what does the offense look like without him?
It looked to me like he made a nice run. He was coming down. It looked like his foot got kind of trapped underneath the mm-hmm. defender that was behind him. It looked like it rolled a little bit. You can kind of feel those types of injuries when you see him. It didn't look significant, which is why I think generally the word was he'll be okay. It looks like he just kind of, you know, might have sprained it a little bit. Mike referred to it as a contusion, in fact, not even a sprain. But if you've ever had an ankle injury, you know that 48 hours after the injury is far worse than right. 1 hour after the injury. So it doesn't surprise me to hear that quickly that Conner won't be available. I think they're going to need to rest that up a little bit for the workload that I think they're going to need him to take in the last three games of the year, if he's even able to get to the Saints game the Patriots game in week 14. Or 15, excuse me. Overall, for the offense, you know, Conner hasn't been running particularly well. I think he might be kind of hitting a wall. He hasn't had this much activity for quite some time, and not really a ton over the last 5-6 years. If you think about it, it's I think he's entering into a new territory as far as football goes, and this is really sort of a gutted out time of the year. You're not going to be 100%. I'm not saying that he got hurt because he's overworked or anything, but he hasn't looked as sharp, I don't think, the last couple of weeks. His numbers certainly bear that out. He had a couple of nice runs. I think he's coming along, but you have to remember, he's still a really young player. He hasn't played a whole lot of professional football. So I don't necessarily think the absence of Conner is as much a problem as the presence of everybody else they have. They have no experience left within the Steelers offense anyway, running the ball. And that's something they haven't done particularly well. They haven't really emphasized all that much. But they're walking into a game now as a very one-dimensional team, and that should scare anybody.
Yeah, that's a big problem. All right, so how much pressure does this put now on the wideouts and the tight ends to make more plays in games?
Well, to be fair, they've put all the pressure on them the last 3 weeks anyway. I mean, yeah. They haven't run well. They haven't committed to running anything. And the receivers, for their part, have made plays in stretches. They have a very good receiving group. It doesn't surprise me that that's what they would want to do. But in a lot of ways, too, I mean, you can't get caught up necessarily in the after-the-fact ratio of running to passing. A lot of that is game-dependent. If you're ahead, you're going to run the ball more. If you're behind, you're going to pass the ball more. So in situations like that, you're going to look a little bit more pass-heavy overall. But generally speaking, they have good receivers. They should be players that they want to get the ball to. And we saw great things from them, Antonio Brown, obviously, in particular, like you usually do, in the game against Los Angeles. You know, you expect that kind of play from Brown, but you're still impressed by it when you see it. I think they're going to need a lot more of that from him. He had 200-some-odd yards the last time they played Oakland, and that was with Landry Jones. So who knows? Maybe he's still kind of chomping at the bit to get out there and you know, help guide the team to a victory when they're in kind of a weakened state. They're going to need that from their top guys in this game.
The two-point conversion play, the first one they ran after Joe Hayden got hurt. Why do I get the feeling that Phillip Rivers walked up to the line of scrimmage, like in the movie The Water Boy, and found Artie Burns?
I'm glad you brought that up, because my opinion, that's exactly what he did. It was not a complex play. There was not another option in the play. Rivers was staring at Gates the entire time, and they stopped. There was a point that the camera showed Rivers look back at the sideline. He's got the two fingers up in the air indicating, and you know, obviously so, that they're going to go for two in that spot. Joe Hayden went down right after one of the dumbest touchdowns I've ever seen in my life.
A yes.
Very, you know, kind of physical Burns-like play in order for them to score in the first place. To see Burns then trot out on the field, I was in the middle of tweeting, they're going to target Artie Burns here. As I'm saying that, they hike the ball. Antonio Gates is older than I am and is somehow 5 yards wide open, streaking toward the corner of the end zone. And as usual, we see the number 25 with Burns on the back, you know, trying to keep up in some way or other. But he got completely fried on that play. It wasn't even competitive. And to my knowledge, I think that Burns has either given up a touchdown or been flagged for pass interference on his like last five defensive snaps. I mean, I'm not sure we've ever seen that big of a target on anybody. And Phillip Rivers knows certainly more about football than I do, to put it, you know, incredibly mildly. He saw Burns out there. He knows what we know, and I think it was deliberate and intentional. And really, it goes to show, we're worried about James Conner getting hurt. What if Hayden gets crushed by his own player again? You're one step away from Artie Burns going on the field when you need to win these games for a playoff spot. That's troubling.
If I'm Tom Bradley, I send a limo to bring Joe Hayden into the game. Just don't. Don't let anybody touch Joe before the game.
Just wrap him up in styrofoam.
A little bubble wrap, all right? It's because Artie Burns is the classic case of the first-round pick that has to play his way out of the league. And to his credit, Neil, he has put himself on that road.
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, the Steelers typically will give a guy 3 years. And I think that's fair to some degree. But, Taylor had these problems a while ago. I know that it's a different NFL, and I don't think Artie Burns has the same kind of mental fortitude that Ike did. But watching him, he's clearly regressed from where he was last season, and that's a mental thing. If anything, at this point, I would almost even say, look, unless you absolutely need to have him on special teams, you really should just kind of put him on the IR and let him, you know, sort himself out mentally and get ready for mini camp, because you really are not in a good situation if he's on the field right now, especially against, you know, you're facing Drew Brees and Tom Brady coming up here pretty quick. You can't have Artie Burns out on the field in any situation. You're better off covering the team's best wide receiver with the linebacker than you are Artie Burns. And I think Mike Tomlin made that adamantly clear on Sunday as well.
Okay, so now they have Oakland. For whatever reason, they haven't played well in Oakland. But when you've watched the Raiders, are they really a mere shell of themselves right now after everything John Gruden's done this first year?
I wouldn't even say they're a shell of themselves. They're still in the womb. I mean, they have no sense of who they are as a team.
No.
There are communication issues. When you watch their defense, it's obvious that nobody on the field has really any clue what's going on. This they're in probably negative two in their rebuild right now. They've got a long way to go. And I'll give Gruden the benefit of the doubt, just in the sense that he wants to completely overhaul the entire roster, which is very similar to changing the car tire while it's still in motion. You know, it's not going to be easy for them to do. And they're going to take a lot of losses the remainder of this season, as well as next year, probably as well, while they try to get this all figured out. But that should worry you, in a sense that a team that you have no idea what they're doing on film is going to come at you with really no rhyme or reason as to what they're doing at any point. That can catch you off guard. And it's the NFL. The other guys are still getting paid. You might have kind of a roster crisis in progress within the team, but that doesn't mean they can't come out and do a couple things well that you weren't prepared for. And I think we've seen that with Oakland. Terrell Pryor, he decides to keep on what's typically a handoff on the outside like they did in what was that, 2014, I think?
Yes.
He runs a naked boot 90 yards untouched on the first play of the game. And that's the difference in a 21-18 win, a game that he completed like nine passes or something. That's a bad football team with a bad roster that came in and did a few things well enough to be able to beat what should have been a better team at home. That's what scares you about a team like Oakland. And frankly, that's the reason why they've beaten the Steelers three times when Ben has started. You have to be concerned about that. It's not like the Steelers are beating every team in the NFL right now. So it's tough. It's going to be a tough game. I'm just not really sure what the Raiders are, what they're trying to be. I don't know. They're John Gruden's not going to win Coach of the Year. I'll say that.
Oh, come on, man.
for anybody that bet that, you gave your money away. Sorry.
Come on, man. Finally, I want to ask you about the Kareem Hunt situation. It's interesting because the 30 for 30 about Bob Knight aired on ESPN over the air last week. And the key, of course, was finally the release, however they got it at Sports Illustrated, of the practice video showing Bob Knight with Neil Reed. The NFL knew about this incident back in February. The Chiefs knew about this incident back in February. They knew about it. Was it just how powerful the video was, or was this once again the NFL dropping the ball?
For me, I'll paraphrase Jerry Jones. I read this quote at one point. I believe it was in one of those investigative pieces that that Sports Illustrated ran. There was some pushback on Roger Goodell's initiative to hire some type of investigative presence within the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Jones was quoted by this anonymous source as saying, "Are we sure we want to do this? When we hire police, we're going to have to use them. Do you really want to do that?" I think that's the most profound statement, and it best summarizes this era of the NFL better than anything anybody else could say.
Agreed.
Because the problem is, you're not the police. You cannot get that video. The accuser does not have to talk to you. So what ends up happening is you're paying people on retainer to run around and try to get all this stuff, but nobody cares if you're the NFL. Right?
You have no power.
Your security tape.
You have no power.
You have absolutely
subpoena.
No jurisdiction over it.
You have no subpoena power.
Yeah. So in that, like, what are you going to do? You can't get it. But the problem is they don't talk about that. They don't mention it. They don't say it. They just kind of want everything to be swept under the rug, and they'll deal with it if and when this video ever gets released. And to me, it's like there's some missing pieces to all of this. Mm-hmm. And the NFL's biggest problem is they didn't point any of this out to begin with. Had they done that, they're going to look bad in the sense that they're spending all of this money on this secret police force that's essentially useless and intimidates nobody. They can't even shake down a hotel in Cleveland for videotape. People aren't going to want anything to do with the NFL sniffing around. So these people are basically null and void. They have no purpose to do what they're doing. But the NFL doesn't want to look bad when it comes to that, so they don't talk about it. Instead, what they'd rather do is dare somebody to go make six figures from TMZ to sell the tape, which they will eventually. If they don't get what they want, they're going to cash in that paycheck. There's no doubt about it. That video was going to get out. And in this case, the NFL has absolutely no reason to think that wasn't going to happen. They were dumb enough to think that there wasn't a tape outside of an elevator at a casino, in another hotel, for them to think that this isn't going to get out one way or another. Pure ignorance and pure stupidity on their part. And I don't know how many years I'm going to go talking about these kinds of issues with the NFL before they actually get smart and try to avoid a problem before it comes up. Instead, they just dare the public to do it for them.
I feel like we've covered this topic with just insert name here as to who it's about. And then
Ray Rice, Tom Brady.
No. Hardy, Brady, Rice. I mean, the Brady thing, I, to this day, it's a year and a half, it's a football. Okay? Make it go away fast.
didn't need to talk to Kareem Hunt.
No,
but you're bringing in scientific experts to prove something that's scientifically not valid on behalf of getting Tom Brady. It just goes to show their decision-making is so poor, but when they start in with something, they're never going
to
let up.
To their credit, their ability, you know, they are really great at circling a fogged-in airport. All right, because that's what they do. Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulon, USA Today. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us as we close down for today. I'll actually be in the studio tomorrow. Some people are pretty happy about it. Others, well, one, appears to be a little bit upset.
Well, they can deal with it. Doesn't happen every day, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there we go. We're
already gifts waiting for you when you arrive tomorrow. I told you that off air a little while ago.
It's about time.
All right, so you're going to be in the Jordan Center doing hoops tonight, Penn State, Indiana. So
after Santa.
Yep, and over on Eagle 107 tonight, Dougie Buckets, Doug Birdsong in Philadelphia tonight. We got LaSalle and the Bison. That'll be a 6:30 airtime. So check it out. Tuesday Night Court.
Sounds great. Looking forward to that as well. All right. Great to have you with us today. Tomorrow, Mark Wogerich, Allentown Morning Call. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.